This is the Quality News Network. Jose Padilla and his two co-defendants have been convicted on charges of conspiracy to kidnap, maim, and murder people and for providing material support to terrorists. Sentencing will take place December 5th. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez called the verdict announced this afternoon, quote, a significant victory in our efforts to fight the threat posed by terrorists and their supporters, end quote. In Oregon, the former director of an Islamic charity accused of supporting al-Qaeda surrendered to authorities and pled not guilty to federal charges. Opening arguments in the case against the charity began yesterday. The White House has approved a plan to expand domestic spying with the use of satellites and aircraft sensors. This technology was previously restricted to mainly foreign surveillance. The technology will be used to combat illegal immigration, natural disasters, and terrorism threats. In the deadliest insurgent attack since the Iraq War began, the Azadi tribe in the northern part of the country has so far sustained 500 deaths in the four simultaneous suicide gasoline tanker truck bombings earlier this week. Al-Qaeda is the primary suspect. In Afghanistan, U.S. and Afghan forces are hammering the Tora Bora region near the Pakistan border region, once thought to be harboring Osama bin Laden. Afghan authorities say 50 militants have been killed. Venezuelan leader Hugo Chavez is moving closer to becoming a dictator. Yesterday, he proposed ending presidential term limits. In Guatemala, another politician has been assassinated in the deadliest election campaign since the country's civil war. More than 40 candidates have been killed in the past few months. Bodies are being pulled out of the rubble south of Lima, Peru, after magnitude 8.0 struck there last night. Many aftershocks are rolling through the area. At least 350 people have been killed by falling buildings. In Minnesota, rescuers have found two more bodies in the ruins of the 35W bridge. The death toll is now at 11. And rescue workers at the collapsed Utah mine are drilling a fourth hole to see if they can find those six miners. Sounds have been detected deep in the earth, but rescuers say it may not be their missing colleagues. Quarterback Michael Vick's charges could get harsher if he doesn't accept a plea by tomorrow afternoon. His remaining two co-defendants are due in court by tomorrow morning. For their plea bargains, all three face various charges on dogfighting. This is the Quality News Network.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for. Quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping. Charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater. A cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
An international study comparing typical burger-based fast food to takeout health food indicates both have similar effects on the cardiovascular system. Researchers say a salad, yogurt, and orange juice prepared at a fast food restaurant appears to be as taxing to the heart health as a burger, fries, and soft drink. Amgen announced it will eliminate up to 14% of its workforce due to unexpected poor sales of its new anemia drug. Computer maker Dell will restate its earnings for 2003 through the first quarter of this year because an internal audit showed numbers had been changed. The company says some employees changed the numbers to meet their targets. The Commerce Department reports that new home construction in July dropped to the lowest level in more than a decade. It fell 6.1%. Last month, 40% of the houses for sale in Las Vegas are vacant. Countrywide's options are running out as other banks won't lend the mortgage giant money, forcing them to use their own cash to fund home loans. The precarious situation is putting them on the verge of bankruptcy, while Moody's cuts their share grade to junk bond status. Travelocity has paid nearly $183,000 in fines to settle federal charges of arranging for flights or hotel reservations for Americans going to Cuba. A Cuba travel embargo has been in place for 45 years. The Dow closed down 16 points today. Oil dropped to 33. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 30 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the GLBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. And yes, I know you're wondering if this is live, and I guarantee you it is absolutely live. We have had the week of embark hell here in North Florida. If you know the word embark, you will immediately recognize it as a very small, very inefficient, and very flaky telephone local service carrier, and we are on embark here in North Florida. We had a beautiful day Saturday, and all of a sudden at 4 o'clock p.m., poof, out went the Internet. It stayed out all the way through Sunday, and then Monday there was no dial tone, and Tuesday there was no DSL, and then there was no dial tone, and then it was just me, and then it was the entire community, and I've just lost track of all the details and what happened when, but I've got to tell you, it is nice to be back in the world. I have a huge amount of emails to go through that have accumulated on the server over the last few days. I will get to those, and thank you for all of your kind wishes and for your emails. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you'll find links to all of the guests as well as the audio archives of their shows. You'll find links to the chat room and the Head On Radio Network main site. There you can find out about all of the progressive programming on Horn. And there are also links to the Strictly Confidential MySpace page. All of that's at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That's 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON, or 877-443-2366. If you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, you can save the studio a nickel or a dollar by dialing 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I try to check the email during the breaks. This will be the first show that I've done over the new T1 line, which is apparently working very, very well. I'm using the new X-Phone link-up streaming to the studio in West Virginia from Tallahassee, and I've got to say that the audio quality is significantly better, and we owe all of you a big thanks for helping make that happen, and a big thanks to CityNet, who is apparently doing all the right things for the studio in West Virginia. Thank you, CityNet. Earlier this week, we had Rabbi Greg Cantor scheduled. That was, I think, on Monday. It might have been Tuesday. We had to ask Greg to reschedule, and he graciously did for this evening because of the network streaming problems due to embark. Rabbi Greg Cantor was ordained in 1993. From the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion upon completion of his studies in Jerusalem and Cincinnati, where he also earned a master's degree. Now, if I'm reading this correctly, if he was ordained in 1993, he must have been one of the very first graduates from the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, because it was in the late 80s that the Jewish Institute of Religion changed the admission requirements to allow gays to join the student body. And so we'll have to ask him about that when he joins us. Shortly after accepting his first placement in Minneapolis, Rabbi Cantor came out to his congregation, and he remained at his congregation for a total of 2 years before accepting a position at a gay and lesbian congregation in South Florida. Now, in South Florida, Rabbi Cantor became involved with a number of GLBT and Jewish causes and has been honored for his service in the community by the Fort Lauderdale GLCC Stars of the Rainbow, and the Dolphin Democrats, Gay Black Pride, among others. Rabbi Cantor has been very active in establishing ordinances in Broward County and Miami-Dade County for gay and lesbian equality, domestic partnerships in Broward County, Florida, And additionally, Rabbi Cantor is a member of the Broward Board of Rabbis and the Greater Miami Rabbinical Association. And he's a past member of the Broward Jewish Family Services. Gee, I'm wondering when he sleeps. And he has also fought for the recognition of rights of Reform rabbis to officiate at GLBT weddings and has written for a number of GLBT publications. He currently serves two congregations in South Florida and does outreach work to the gay community. I discovered Rabbi Cantor when the big story broke in South Florida regarding the toilet mayor. Rabbi Cantor, Greg Cantor, was one of the many speakers at the Unite Fort Lauderdale rally that occurred when the mayor down there made an awful fool of himself, which we covered in depth here. If you'll recall, we played some audio from that. We played the audio from Matt Foreman down there. So in any case, with no further delay, I would like to welcome Greg to the show. Greg, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. And Greg, you are the first rabbi I've ever spoken to, so be gentle with me. It's my first time.
Okay. It won't hurt, I promise.
Okay, thank you. Greg, I'm very impressed with you. On the show, we've talked to a representative from Metropolitan Community Church. We also talked to a representative, the executive director from New Ways Ministries, which is a Catholic organization. So I have been looking for you for a while, and when I saw your list appear in the list, I said, wow, this guy is a for real Jewish rabbi, and he's for real active in the gay community, and he's actually speaking at this event. I've got to track him down, and thank you so much for being with us.
It's really my pleasure. I think this radio show is a great service.
Well, I enjoy doing it. It's great fun, and I've got to tell you, the people around the Head On Radio Network are some of the nicest and most genuine folks you will ever come across. And this particular program is the GLBT version of Conversation Radio. We call it Conversation Radio because it's open-ended and there's no rush to fit you in between a commercial break or any sort of hidden agenda. And, Greg, were you, in fact, one of the first graduates from the Hebrew Union College there?
Well, when you say that, I think if I understand your question correctly, you're asking me if I was one of the first out gay graduates.
Yes, that's what I really mean. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and the answer is no, for a couple reasons. First of all, I wasn't out when I was ordained. I came out shortly after I was ordained. And even though there was a policy and I had some classmates who were out, I should say schoolmates. I don't remember if anyone in my class was, but people who were studying at the school at the same time as me.
Yeah.
And I just had recently in my final year, fifth and final year of rabbinical school, started coming out to myself. So it was new to me. And I was still working on what that meant for me, still at the time I was ordained and took my first job. Yeah.
Very interesting. And your first job, you were appointed as a pastor in Minneapolis? Or that's not the right word. I told you it's my first time. As a rabbi.
Yeah. My first job after I was ordained was at a synagogue in Minneapolis, Minnesota. A great city, a wonderful congregation, and it was a scary time for me. I went there thinking, I had done a lot of research, by the way, leading up to it about other gay rabbis and how they were doing it, you know, and what I found out was any other gay rabbis that I knew of had come out after they accepted their jobs. As you correctly noted, the policy to ordain out gay rabbis was brand new. So anyone who was out and gay and in the field had accepted the job closeted and came out later on and had the good fortune of the support of their congregation and kept their job.
I
see. So when I found that out, to me, the message was, you better do the same thing or you're not going to get a job, because it's never been done before. So I sort of took the safe route. And my plan was, I called it my two-year plan. I was going to just sort of stay under the radar for 2 years and do my job and sort of put my nose to the grindstone. And then after 2 years, hopefully I'd be in the same boat as those other rabbis and could come out safely and not worry about losing my job. But what I discovered was, after 2 months of my two-year plan, I was just miserable, and I couldn't do it, and I had to come out. So I said, well, you know, if I lose my job, then I lose my job. But this is killing me, and I didn't feel good personally. Professionally, I felt like I was keeping a secret that I shouldn't have to keep, and was setting a bad example, and that I needed to come out and be myself, and I could do a better job that way. So
very interesting, very interesting.
Yeah,
we have
what I did.
Greg, a lot of in addition to GLBT listeners, we have a lot of straight folks who are progressive straight folks. We sort of inherit them from Bob Kincaid's show, which runs just prior to this. They're sympathetic to our cause and what we go through, but they don't fully understand us. You know, obviously the mainstream media doesn't do a very good job of presenting us in any way. So I just want to point out to them, and I'm sure you'll agree, that this thing about coming out to people about your sexual orientation, it really is telling a lot more than just what you do in bed. It's a terrible secret to have to keep from people. There's always this this edge of insecurity and not really connecting.
Right, and especially when, you know, being a brand new rabbi and wanting to do my job with integrity and then keeping a secret, it just was like it didn't work for me, and I could no longer do it.
How did they react?
Well, I would say the reactions overall were good, to generalize, but they were certainly mixed. Not everyone was good. I was, the congregation I was serving in Minneapolis at the time had around 2,000 households that were members of the synagogue. So,
wow.
You know, you take any sampling of 2,000 people, even a sampling of Reformed Jews, which is probably, just because they're Reformed Jews, skewed to be a little more progressive, you're going to find exceptions to the rule in there. So I got lots of mail, mostly good.
Bet. Yes.
Mostly good and supportive and, you know, some beautiful stuff that made me want to cry about other people and their struggles. And it was a real gift to be able to be an inspiration to them. And then
good.
I got mail from people who felt I had hurt and deceived them, and mail from people who just said, you know, ugly, bigoted things.
I see.
Like I said, overall it was good. They had the option to get rid of me upon this revelation, to borrow a phrase. But they didn't.
So even though you'd only been there 2 months, they would be allowed to choose another rabbi. Is that the way that works? At any time?
Yeah. Well, by the time I had come out, it was more than 2 months, because while I made the decision to come out after 2 months, I really worked with the other professional staff that I was working with side by side to do this as best as I possibly could. And I gave them as much time as they thought they needed to. So there were a few more months probably unfolded before I made a big announcement to the congregation, and really by virtue of that the whole metropolitan Twin Cities, and I heard from people all over the country.
Ah, so the media got a hold of it.
Yeah, but by that time, they could have fired me and just proceeded ahead. It was, like I said, it was a big congregation, So at the time, I was the fourth of four rabbis on the staff there. So they could have operated with three rabbis and the other professional staff that they had serving them.
Ah, I
see. Made that choice. But they did not. They voted overwhelmingly to keep me, and that was a beautiful thing about that congregation, which I will never forget.
Well, it must have been very encouraging. Did you do this in a service?
What I did was, again, because, you know, I felt like I had to do this in partnership with the other professional staff, I came out to the board of directors. They discussed it at a meeting, and they and I together sent a letter to every household in the congregation. Coincidentally, the Friday night, which is when our main congregational service was every Friday night, that Friday night, it was my turn to preach. And so naturally, given the letter that 2,000 households had received in their mail that day, that's what I talked about.
Wow.
But they came knowing already and expecting to hear what I had to say about it.
I see. Was it an uncomfortable situation? I'm sure you must have had a lump in your throat doing that. Did you not?
Oh, I had a lump in my throat. I was shaking. I was teary. It was, one of the most transitional moments in my life.
And no doubt there was an extra large crowd that night.
It was standing room only.
Oh no. So there you were, standing room only. Wow, Greg, what an
experience. Big congregation too. So yeah, it was scary. But it was good scary because they had already voted and they were just there to hear what I had to say about it.
Well, Greg, you've mentioned Reform Judaism a couple of times. I've been doing some research. In fact, I actually watched a part of the movie, Trembling Before God, or I've forgotten the exact title of it.
Yes, that is the title of a movie about Orthodox Jews, gay Orthodox Jews.
Wonderful movie. I didn't get to complete that. I saw part of that today. I intended to see that in completely before I had you on, but very touching movie. Now let me put it like this, we do news from all over the place, and we've been doing some news from Jerusalem about what has happened to the gay pride celebration over there. Apparently the ultra orthodox folks are extremely upset, to the point of, you know, some of them were, you know, burning garbage containers, and fewer had, you know, weapons, and I think someone was stabbed a few years back.
Yeah.
Apparently it's huge. I mean, it seems to be just as bad as our nutcases in the Christian side of the... you know what I'm saying?
Well, ultra-right wing is the same, whether you paint it Christian, Muslim, or Jewish, or any other extreme sort of flavor. It's ultra-right wing. It really looks the same. You know,
I agree.
It's like, if aliens were looking at this planet, they'd sort of lump them all together.
Well, you know, that's a very good point, Greg. It really is. The thing about the radical fundamentalist Muslim community too. No matter how you say, and what I can't understand, Greg, is why are they so proud about the word fundamentalist? To me, it's like, you know, it's like saying you're an adult and you're still in fundamental reading. I mean, okay, now it's time to move along. What is the pride in being fundamental? I just don't follow that.
You know, I'm a pretty much a live and let live kind of guy. But when I see some of these people and listen to some of these people, extremists of any brand or flavor, it's an ugly, awful thing.
Well, it really is, and it seems that the main media voice is given only to the far right. There are so many Christian voices, and I'm sure there are Jewish voices too, speaking truth to all of this. There has to be, if the Jewish Institute of Religion allowed openly gay folks to come in that
really
long ago.
To be part of the Reform movement. You go to the Reform movement's website. It's www.urj.org, and type in gay, and it's just amazing what you'll see about how the reform movement has spoken up to defend gay rights and supported gay marriage and spoken out against right-wingers, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Well, Greg, is the reform is, do I refer to it as a movement? Is that the largest constituency of the Jewish faith in the United States? Is that the mainstream?
Yeah, you know, I have to confess I'm horrible with numbers, but I believe it still is. It's a big group all across the world, but especially in North America.
Well, that's encouraging news. That's encouraging news.
And you know what's even more encouraging is we're watching the conservative movement, which is a little more traditional than reform. We're watching them come along. And we've got to give their smaller movements, like the Reconstructionist movement, and they're in a great place, just as good as the reform movement on a lot of issues, if not better. And, you know, there's just some really wonderful, beautiful, progressive Jews out there doing good things on gay and lesbian rights and all kinds of issues.
Well, I'm trying to wrap my head around that. These, for instance, reform and Reconstructionist, are they to a degree? I understand you're all Jewish, but is it sort of like our Protestant breakups? For instance, you know, you have the Southern Baptists, and then they broke up because the, you know, slavery years ago, you know, back when they couldn't, they wanted slavery. You know, that there's all these divisions in the Protestant community. Is that a little like what the Reform and Reconstructionists, and how does that work? I don't fully understand.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, we all sort of have a similar source and share a similar language and similar holidays, but when it comes to some of the big things, like what we believe and what we think about God and what we think about human rights and so on, we break off into different groups and different organizations. Sometimes the different groups have a lot in common, and sometimes they're almost as different as night and day.
Interesting. Well, Greg, are there GLBT worship groups when I read in your bio that you serve two congregations, are they GLBT congregations, or how does that work?
No, actually, well, that's two different questions. First of all, yes, there are gay and lesbian synagogues all over the country and other organizations for gay Jews around the world.
Yes.
But the two that I serve are ordinary congregations. They're not particularly gay outreach congregations.
Interesting.
I'm out there, as I am, you know, in my life. But those congregations don't have a special outreach to gay and lesbian Jews. There is one here in South Florida, Congregation Eitz Chaim, and I was their rabbi when I moved here about 11 years ago for about 4.5 years.
Well, that's very interesting. It also makes a strong statement about what you did in speaking out in the mayor incident when you joined the folks, because your congregation or your group is not is in the GLBT community. That's a really powerful statement that you joined them.
Yeah, well, you know, they're a great congregation. Though there's one I serve during most of the year. And they're a little tiny congregation in a smaller Jewish community here in Florida. And I'm there two or three times a month because they're such a small group. And I told them when I interviewed, I said, look, you know, you should know this before you hire me, because I didn't want to go into a kind of situation where, you know, I had to keep it a secret. I had already been through that. So I was out to them. And they said, well, we want you. And they've been terrific, supporting me, supporting my partner, and supporting diversity.
This is wonderful. Do you have an extraordinary number of GLBT folks who attend because you were the pastor there? Do you think you've had any influence along those lines?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think that, you know, like I said, it's in a small little town in Miami-Dade County.
Yes.
And there are other options of larger congregations with a real strong outreach to the gay and lesbian Jewish community. So I think most people go there.
Very interesting.
Which is fine. You know, my opinion is everyone should have a place to go. And as long as you got a place to go, that's cool. If it's my congregation, wonderful. If it's another congregation where you're happy, that's good too, because there's room for all of us.
Well, I've been saying to various folks in this program for a while that I've been involved with the Methodist Church for many, many years. I grew up in that church. And this thing about the Bush Library at Southern Methodist University is just the last straw. That, you know, it is a finalized decision there. They actually have architects. The White House is refusing to announce it, of course, because of the huge stir that will cause. But it's apparently been a pre-wired thing since around 2002, 2001, sort of a backhanded negotiation with the board of directors or the money folks there at the college. Anyway, that's the last straw. So, yeah, I'm shopping is what I'm doing. Probably will end up at MCC. Greg, tell us about Jewish Light, the Jewish Light. Now, that's the first site that I came across. Is the Jewish Light nationwide, or is it a Florida thing? How does that work?
The Jewish Light is just a little group that I formed when I left the congregation, the GLBT congregation I was with for the first 4.5 years. And I didn't really leave them. I just stopped being their rabbi. But I formed a little group, and I called it the Jewish Light. And then as things took off with these other congregations that I'm serving now, the Jewish Light took a little bit more of a back seat. So it's just, I kept the website so people can find me on the Internet, but it's really not that great of a website. So people find me, they email me, they get referrals when they need a rabbi, and the Jewish Light is sort of fading away. And I'm still staying strong.
I see. Well, we've been posting that link in our chat room. We do have a chat room. I keep an eye on it during the shows. And for any other listeners that would like to have a look, it's jewishlight.org. But apparently you say it's fading away, probably because the powerful position you've taken in the churches, you don't need that presence.
Yeah, well, we don't call it the church, but I understand what...
Oh, yes. Yes,
that's okay.
Yes.
That's an understandable and common mistake. You're in good company, so don't worry about
Thank
it.
Thank you.
But, yeah, it's, you know, I've got plenty to keep me busy. So the Jewish, I maintain the websites as a way for people to find me on the World Wide Web. And they can also find me out there in the community, as you saw, doing all kinds of stuff.
I see. Well, some of the reading that I've been doing earlier today, there is apparently, I'm just looking for the reference here, it's one of the holidays, the Jewish holidays, and it has to do with, I think it's Yom Kippur, where actually it's an afternoon reading that has to do with the biblical, the Torah, some of the old verses about homosexuality. What was that like growing? Did you grow up in a household that read that? How was it growing up for you? You seem like you haven't suffered any real damage. You seem like you're doing pretty well.
Well, you know, in my home, I was probably the most interested in getting involved in whatever went on at the temple. Of course, you know, it was the encouragement of my parents that got me involved initially. But once it really took off for me, I was more involved than my parents or my brother. Also, I think the Jewish approach in general, and again, I want to emphasize I'm generalizing here, but the Jewish approach is we're not as biblical verse oriented as some of our Christian brothers and sisters. So we know about that stuff, but it's not all consuming as it is in some faiths, and it's not as emphasized in our studies, you know, about getting hung up on particular verses.
This is interesting. I have to ask, do you think it's because of, a different reading or a different interpretation or a deeper understanding of the faith, or, you know, how can I put it? The fundamentalists on the Christian side tend to be such literalists. And in fact, I use the word bibliolatry from time to time, that it seems as if they lift up the Bible as worshiping the Bible ahead of any other thing. They'll tell you they're Bible believing Christians, and they'll list that off first before they'll tell you about their family or about their kids or any other aspect of their life. I'm very interested in this understanding that it's not such a literal interpretation.
Yeah, you know, it's we look for inspiration in it, absolutely, and we also know that we can find inspiration in the study of history, the study of science, in particular psychology and sociology and so on. And, I'm proud to be part of a faith movement that encourages me to be a well-rounded human being and not just focused on religious doctrine.
I see. Yes, religious doctrine does seem to be the downfall. So much confusion.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It ought to be a lot simpler than that. It seems to be that faith ought to be a more natural thing than all of this noise that we hear.
Yeah, well, you know, I think there are people out there with hang-ups and are uncomfortable about gay and lesbian issues. Some of them are gay themselves. A lot of them are not. And if they can find something to hang their hang-ups on, as it were, a hook to pin it on, the mixed metaphors, then the Bible is a great, sort of get-out-of-jail-free card. See, the Bible says so, and then the argument just has to stop for those people.
Yes.
And then there are those of us who say, well, you know, some of us believe that the world is not black and white, that there are shades of gray, and that we got to look deeper, that the Bible's a beautiful beautiful document, and that other, you know, traditional Jewish texts, there are also beautiful documents. But it's a great big world out there, and we need to look at all of it with our eyes and hearts and minds open wide.
Well, Greg, I have to ask, you know, it seems, and I'm wondering if Jewish folks are affected by this too, or if you've noticed it in the Jewish community. It seems to me that the Christians at this point in time seem to be very much paperback oriented. You know, 50, 100 years ago, there were these great volumes of deep thought and study by people who pondered and thought about these issues and about spirituality, night and day, some very committed people, and I could probably name some names. But the thing is that it seems that these days with the Christian bookstores, everything is so paperback and disposable. Everybody's so there's no real depth, it seems to me. Is the Jewish community is there a huge paperback, movement amongst? What do you think about that? That's just my observation.
Well, you know what? I have a different observation. I think there's a lot out there. You know, you mentioned earlier about politics and the reform movement and so on, and we were talking about how the media portrays us. But the truth is, when it comes to things like the movement for equal rights in marriage, it's been religious leaders, in particular clergy, who've been leading the battle for marriage rights for gay and lesbian people. And that's something that, like you said, it just doesn't get covered. And so the voice is there, but, you know, if it's not going to be shocking or controversial, it might not make the 11 o'clock news.
I see.
You know, so to say that, you know, I'm a caring person is not necessarily shocking or controversial. So that's not what makes the news. But we're out there, and we're lending our voice to good causes, good progressive liberal causes. And we just aren't getting a fair amount of coverage.
You know, when I have ministers and now you and other folks like from Soul Force and the various organizations, they always seem more optimistic than I am. And God help me, it may be because of the things I have to report night after night. You know, the murders, the you know, the latest publication from the American Family Association, and
right.
And
right
sometimes now. Yes, good Lord, and focus on the family and all those people, and it just sometimes it's overwhelming. It looks so grim.
It really does, and like you know, that's what makes the news, and that's what comes to your attention. That's what reaches your desk. And when a synagogue does something radical like host a PFLAG group, that doesn't make the news. But it's happening at synagogues all over the country. When, you know, it used to be radical years ago when some synagogues in the Reform movement said, you know what, we're not going to have the Boy Scouts meet at our synagogues anymore, given their discriminating policy. But that doesn't make the news anymore either, you know. But we're out there. We're doing the right thing. There's groups out there doing the right thing. There have been for years. Of course, there's always exceptions to the rule. And we're growing. You know, I think even the mood in the country is changing. I'm hopeful, that is. Like you noticed, a lot of us are hopeful. But I think even very religious evangelical Christians are saying, you know, I'm tired of letting stuff like gay issues steer the direction of politics in this country. There are bigger and more important things.
Well, truly they are, and it's this the setup of a straw man. You know, it's typical of the way the news is reported amongst the Sean Hannitys and the Rush Limbaughs. There's a straw man set up, and it's easy to knock it down, and
sure.
There's just so many people well, you know, the right owns talk radio, at least the terrestrial version.
They sure do, and, you know, it's good to see the progressive voice starting to take little nibbles at a bigger share of that, but they do. You know, I remember, Peter, about 3.5 years ago, the last presidential election here in Florida. And there were long lines in here in Florida because we could vote early. And we all thought that would be a great way to skip the lines, and it turned out to be a great way to get caught in some of those lines. And there was a woman in front of me, a very religious, church-going woman, who, because these lines were long, a lot of us were talking to each other, and she said she's voting for Bush because of gay marriage.
I
said to her, but don't you know that both candidates have said that they're not in favor of gay marriage, that's really not on the ballot? And she said, oh, that's what they tell you. And I just thought, wow, this woman's church has her brainwashed.
Exactly. And we see it time and time again.
The facts are out there, and they've trained this, you know, otherwise beautiful woman to ignore the facts. Scary.
Yes, it is. You know, just the other day, down in Fort Lauderdale, you have a Fox News affiliate down there. It's an AM 850. We're talking about the ownership of the AM band. Conservative talk radio, of course, they have all the standard, you know, voices of the conservative right, and there's apparently a morning show called Mitchell and Morley in the morning. It runs from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. in Fort Lauderdale on 850 WFTL. Apparently, they gave one of the fellows off. They gave Morley the day off last Friday so that Mayor Jim Nagel could appear as the co-host on that radio program during morning drive time. You talk about you know, giving people the voice. I was tempted to stream it, but I figured it was too early in the morning. I just couldn't handle that at 6 a.m. the streaming station. Did you happen to hear about that or hear of it or to hear it?
No, I mean, of course, I know about the whole saga with our wonderful, I'm making quotes with my fingers in the air, the word wonderful, mayor. But, no, if I am listening to the radio between 6 and 9, it's usually progressive radio. And usually what I'm doing between 6 and 9 is walking the dogs, taking care of their food and water, and just trying to rub the sleep out of my eyes.
Yes, that's... But you realize, of course, the Christian right has you, you know, soliciting children in cruising schoolyards during those hours. You're not doing the right thing, sir. You realize that.
I know. They don't understand. They think my life is much more exciting and outrageous than it really is.
God, yes. It's,
you know,
amazing.
They spread a lot of untruths, and people believe a lot of stuff that's scary and untrue about you and me. And so I'm glad that there's a program like yours out there to, you know, spread the truth.
Well, this particular program, when I began the program, they realized that I freely say on the air, I love Jesus, but I'm no Christian. I say that because I think the word is meaningless. Any word that you use that you have to then go and explain, whether you mean a good Christian or a bad Christian, the word has become meaningless. In fact, I think it's been co-opted to the Republican Party. Maybe I'm being a little harsh on that, or at least the right wing. But anyway, that's my feeling. So they knew I was going to be having voices from the faith community on the show, and that's cool with them. They're, you know, it's in other words, this anytime you don't need an interview time. If there's anything you ever want to call and present or say or something going on, you just call the toll-free number. I'll put you on the air right away.
Well, I appreciate that, and if you ever need my take or opinion on something, if you want the Jewish progressive view, feel free to call me.
Wonderful. Well, that's no doubt going to come up, because we have a number of Jewish folks in our chat room, actually, and who've been following your conversation, and they have received you very well. And before I close with you, I want to just give you the opportunity to... you know, I've been asking a lot of questions, and perhaps your own agenda. There may be something you want to say or get out before, without my asking.
Well, you know, there's so many things I have on my agenda. Some of them are of gay interest, and some of them are of human interest, and some of them are of Jewish interest. But, you know, as relates to... the topic at hand on your show, you know, I want our listeners out there to vote. Get out there and vote. It's one of the best things you can do, and it's such a privilege we have that we take for granted. And when we do take for granted, we get trampled on. Some of the best advice I ever got from a gay activist, and perhaps by coincidence, perhaps not, also a Jewish man who was a mentor to me in some ways, was that we don't have to take table scraps anymore. You know, we deserve the same rights as everybody else. So it's time for us to stand up and come out to our family and friends and know that there's a community of people out there who will support us, as scary as it seems sometimes, and let people know that we care, we vote, we pray, we love, we raise families, we make mistakes like everybody else, and we strive for the best, like the best among us, whether they're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or straight. So, you know, I want listeners to be inspired. Speak up, vote, and share how they feel about the direction of the world, politics, faith, and so on, with the people they know.
Well, Greg, That's so well said, and I have to tell you that the listeners are already typing things in the chat room like, please have him back. He's easy to listen. People are saying, don't stop him, let him preach. People say, yes, you are well received, sir. You are very well received, and I have thoroughly enjoyed having you on Strictly Confidential this evening. It was very kind of you to reschedule for us, and I would love to have you back.
It's my pleasure. I'll look forward to the invitation.
Yes, sir. And you have a very good evening, and thanks again.
You do the same, Peter. God bless.
God bless. Wow. Good night. Amazing, amazing man, and so pleased to have him. I when I saw his name amongst the list of people who spoke in Fort Lauderdale, I thought to myself, that's someone we would like to have on this show, and in fact, he is. These are voices that we need to hear so desperately. You know, right now Florida is about to be invaded by the extreme right. Tampa is the location. We are about to have the Family Impact Summit in Tampa. This will occur in September. And if they would only have people like Greg there to speak. But no, they have Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council. They have Greg Bauer, who is a failed Republican presidential candidate. They have the American Family Association's Don Waldman, Southern Baptist Convention's Richard Land. Are you sitting down? Wait for it. Catherine Harris will be there. Yes, not that she has any religious credentials whatsoever. The only thing she's ever done is stolen an election. Are you ready? Sit down. Ken Blackwell is one of the speakers. Yes, the man whose only credential is that he stole the election in Ohio. We have Bob Knight going to be there from the Media Research Center, and as well as this new ex-gay movement. Oh, by the way, I meant to ask Greg if there's an equivalent ex-gay movement in the Jewish community. Next time we have him, we'll just have to talk to him about that. That would be Nancy Heachy, which to me sounds like hoochie. But Nancy Heachy, she's an ex-gay representative. She's not, was never gay or a lesbian herself, but you understand she represents them. She's fallen off the branch of the American Family Association, if I'm not mistaken. Also, the president of Exodus International, whose people are apologizing left and right. They're going to be there. There are going to be no less than six panels on homosexuality. There's a panel or discussion during the 3 or 4 day conference, one called Homosexuality and Ministry, Homosexuality and Youth, The Homosexual Agenda. That's covered Saturday and Sunday. I can't begin to tell you. They're going to take a few breaks from beating up on the GLBT community and do a couple of smaller sessions like Christian Citizenship and Community Decency. That will involve Ken Blackwell. Can you believe it? That the lowest of the low. Also at the same time, there is another conference taking place in Tampa. Now this conference is called Values Voter Debate. The conference I just talked about was called Family Impact Summit. Now the Republican presidential candidates are all going to, well, at least. Most of them who are reportedly scheduled to attend the Values Voter Debate in Fort Lauderdale during the same month. Now, it's being hosted by a separate group than this Family Impact Summit, but it's not a mutually exclusive group. There's overlay there. And this Family Impact Summit, you can pretty much judge by the hotel that they're recommending. They're going for the not real high income. It's a fundraiser. That's all it is. They're going to they're going to have people there. They can stay at the Hampton Inn or the Residence Inn by Marriott. These are not really high end hotels. Comfort suites. Their room rates range from $85 a night to $149 a night, which is not an expensive room unless you're staying at a crack hotel somewhere. But the purpose of the conference is to beat up on gay folks in every possible moment. They're going to affirm the national relationship with God and our places of worship and schools and mottos and public squares, yes, and they're going to secure our national interest in the institution of marriage and family, yes, and they're going to secure our fundamental right as parents to the care, custody, and get this, kids, control of our children. You know, it's all about control, isn't it? Looking forward to another guest that we didn't get to have on earlier this week who's going to be talking about children and, well, it's, but the, well, he gave me an example over the phone. You know, all this stuff when we're talking about setting up the interview. Look, his name is Bronski. I'm really looking forward to having this fellow. Talking about how there's this huge pressure on kids about what toys they pick. You know, if the little boy doesn't pick G.I. Joe and perhaps picks the Barbie or vice versa, there's this huge issue. I mean, they're just toys. Let the kids choose whatever they want to choose. This conference, this Family Impact Summit, is going to secure our God-bestowed right to life and secure an environment of decency that's free from pornography. And, oh, by the way, I should point out to you, one of the reasons that they're using these three hotels is, and I quote, "They have been selected as our flagship hotels specifically because they don't offer pay-per-view pornography, and they're giving us great rates." You know, isn't that typical of the right? You know, you just can't trust you can't trust those right-wingers in a motel room with a credit card and pay-per-view pornography. No, sir, they're going to be hitting it left and right. Yes, sir, they will. So that's why they had to choose hotels without pornography. Now, not to mention, a lot of this information came from Pam's Houseblend, her blog. One of the people who wrote into Pam's Houseblend is pointing out, yeah, well, you know, so what? They don't have pay-per-view pornography at these hotels. What they do have is free Wi-Fi access, and well, you know, there's no pornography on the internet whatsoever. So that's so there are also people there from the Abstinence Clearinghouse, the Heritage Foundation. I mean, it's a who's who and scum. Mission America, well, maybe not scum. Maybe they mean well, but they're liars. They know they're liars. They beat us up all the time. I don't mind calling them liars. That's what they're doing. Citizens for Community Values, Alliance Defense Fund, Exodus International, oh, I think I mentioned this, Out of Exile Ministries, the Liberty Council, oh, it just goes on and on. Now, this is taking place, now you realize one of the reasons this is taking place is because of the Marriage Amendment. They're having trouble, well, of course, Florida is very important to win from a Republican point of view in the upcoming elections, but also there's the Marriage Amendment in Florida. They're having trouble getting enough signatures on to put the marriage amendment back in front of the voters in Florida. And I'm just looking over the schedule now. Yes, sessions Friday, session Saturday, session Sunday, all about the homosexual agenda and the truth about homosexuality. It's a major slugfest, kids. It's a beat-the-hell-out-of-you three-day conference featuring the very finest of the right-wing movement. Tony Perkins, Gary Bauer, Bishop Harry Jackson. His only qualifications that he has a master's in business administration and found out he can make more money in religion. You've got Ken Blackwell, God do we know who he is. Tom Menery, who is from Focus on the Family. Don Wildman, whose minions wrote down the tag numbers for the poor guys trying to go to the little gay bar. And remember the movie we talked about, Small Town Gay Bar? That's Wildman. In fact, Wildman is interviewed in that movie, if I'm not mistaken. Got Chambers there, Alan Chambers, ex-gay, Nancy Heachy, John Stamberger, Richard Land from the Ethics and Religious Liberty Southern Baptist Convention. Catherine Harris, this is how she's described. She comes from a family that's active in Christian evangelism. And her grandfather was a Christian missionary in Africa. It just goes on and on, and it glows and blows. It doesn't mention that they're one of the wealthiest families in the state of Florida. And if you drive down I-4, either way you look, all the land belongs to them. Not that there's anything wrong with having property. It's just that she's, you know, God, she's, no, don't get me started on her makeup. Please don't get me started on Catherine Harris' makeup. And we have, not worth mentioning. I've got to tell you, these folks are just pitiful. Never ceases to amaze me. And, oh, there's more. There's much, much more coming up on the second hour of Strictly Confidential. And I am your host, Peter Godbold. And as we come up on the top of the hour, you're listening to Strictly Confidential. Confidential toll-free at 877, the number 4, head on. Still hold your memories, and the memories.
This is the Quality News Network. Jose Padilla and his two co-defendants have been convicted on charges of conspiracy to kidnap, maim, and murder people, and for providing material support to terrorists. Sentencing will take place December 5th. The White House thanked the jury for a just verdict. In Oregon, the former director of an Islamic charity accused of supporting Al-Qaeda surrendered to authorities and pleaded not guilty to federal charges. Opening arguments in that case against the charity began yesterday. The White House has approved a plan to expand domestic spying with the use of satellites and aircraft sensors. The technology will be used to combat illegal immigration, natural disasters, and terrorism threats. In the deadliest insurgent attack since the Iraq War began, the Azadi tribe in the northern part of the country has so far sustained close to 500 deaths in Tuesday's four simultaneous suicide gasoline tanker truck bombings. The Al-Qaeda is the primary suspect. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki condemned the attacks as a, quote, heinous crime, end quote, and has initiated a full inquiry. The northern region that was hit is a soft target for the insurgents with scant U.S. troop presence. Venezuelan leader Hugo Chavez is moving closer to becoming a dictator. Yesterday, he proposed ending presidential term limits. In Guatemala, another politician has been assassinated. More than 40 candidates have been killed in the past few months in Guatemala. The Peruvian government has declared a state of emergency since Wednesday night's devastating earthquake. The magnitude 8.0 and ensuing aftershocks destroyed entire villages and vital roadways. At least 450 people have been killed by crumbling churches and homes. Water and communications have been cut off. In Minnesota, rescuers have found two more bodies in the ruins of the 35W bridge. The death toll there now stands at 11. And rescue workers in Utah are drilling a fourth hole to see if they can find those six miners. Quarterback Michael Vick's charges could get harsher if he doesn't accept a plea deal by Friday. His remaining two co-defendants are due in court tomorrow morning for their plea bargains. All three, along with another co-defendant that already accepted a plea deal, are charged with operating an interstate dog-fighting ring. And the musician that brought drums to the forefront, one of the architects of bebop, has passed away. Max Roach was 83. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Hey, what's he doing?
What?
That guy is changing his oil in the street and letting it run right in the storm drain, which pollutes the bay. I totally wouldn't surf in that.
Dude, what can we do?
Call 1-800-CLEANUP to report anyone dumping oil, antifreeze, or paint in the street.
This way, fools like that can be fined.
Tell everyone to call 1-800-CLEANUP.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
NASA is cautiously optimistic that the gas sustained at liftoff to Endeavour's belly won't have to be repaired before the space shuttle flies home. Safety to the crew is not a concern, but lengthy repairs after the ship gets home could delay the next mission. An international study comparing typical burger-based fast food to takeout health food indicates that both of them have similar effects on the cardiovascular system. Researchers say a salad, yogurt, and orange juice prepared at a fast food restaurant appears to be as taxing to the heart health as a burger, fries, and soft drink. Travelocity's paid nearly $183,000 in fines. They're settling federal charges of arranging for flights or hotel reservations for Americans going to Cuba. A Cuban travel embargo has been in place for 45 years. Building permits for homes have dropped 23% over the last year, and 40% of the houses that are for sale in Las Vegas are empty. Countrywide, options are running out as other banks won't lend the mortgage giant money, forcing them to use their own cash to fund their home loans, and the precarious situation is putting them on the verge of bankruptcy, while Moody's cuts their share grade to junk bond status. Well, it's a term often used, but very appropriate for today's session on Wall Street. It was a roller coaster day. At one point, the Dow plunged 340 points, but at the end, it rallied back up to just down 15 points, and the S&P was actually up 4. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
And he's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And welcome back to the second hour of Strictly Confidential. This is episode 30. The telephone number is 877, the number 4 head on. That's 877, the number 4 head on. Or if you have an unlimited long distance calling plan, you can use 304-658-3333 and save the studio a buck. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. You know, I was just thinking about Greg and our conversation with Greg. You know, I really liked him. He was a level-headed, he was a good man. I'm wondering if maybe I'm a closet Jew. I think as long as I'm kicking the Methodists to the curb after 53 years, I ought to check out the Jewish community too. I mean, if they're like that, wow. Enjoyed talking with that man. You know, we're just talking about the conference that's taking place in Tampa, the Family Impact Summit with the cast of thousands. You know, and you may think, you know, this is a standalone incident, and but I want to talk about some of these conferences like this and this sort of continual presentation of this point of view, this narrow-minded and hate-filled point of view. It has an effect. It has an effect on not just the gay community. It has an effect on everyone. Example, I'm going to run through several of them. Pat Tillman's mother, first example. She testified before Congress regarding the cover-up of his death. And maybe you will recall that Colonel Kaczlarich called Pat Tillman worm dirt. That's right, worm dirt to his mother. He's a battalion commanding officer at Fort Riley, Kansas. And furthermore, he suggested to her that the reason that her family is unhappy with the findings of the investigations, in other words, the cover-up investigations that have happened in the past, is because of the absence of Christian faith in their lives. You see, conferences like this promote the "we're better than you" agenda. We're smarter than you. We've got the inside track. We've got the inside private line to God. And it allows this sort of outrageous speech from government officials to citizens of the United States. I'm going to ask Agnes to run a clip where you will hear Pat Tillman's mother explain about what they told her about her faith, and that they called her son worm dirt. Would you run the Tillman clip, please?
Colonel Kaczlarich said, and I am appalled that he would make these comments. He's entitled to his opinion, of course, but he said that we would never be satisfied because we're not Christians. Spirituality doesn't enter into this, I guess, in his mind, but, you know, we're not Christians, so we can't put him to rest. And he then did, and that's why we will never be satisfied, and we're just a pain in the ass, basically. Then he did an interview on ESPN where he basically reiterated this, I mean, to a reporter, who then put it on a website and in an actual article. He also said that it must make us feel terrible that Pat's worm dirt.
Yes. He said to Pat's mother, "It must make you feel terrible that Pat is worm dirt." You see, permission to make outrageous comments come from conferences like these because the undertone and the air of superiority is disgusting. And there's more. We have a death in the family, in the GLBT family. We have Gary Mattson and Winfield Mauder. They've been a couple for 14 years. Well, they were shot in their beds, shot to death, by two brothers, a Matthew and Tyler Williams. They were two white supremacists, and they hated the LGBT community. You see, they grew up in a household that Blair, not the gay couple, the Matthew and Tyler. They grew up in a family that reportedly all night long you could hear religious programming blaring from the house, from the radio. The father would wander up and down the street. He was devoutly religious and preaching to no one in particular. He would walk up and down the street carrying a staff and preaching to no one in particular. The kids came from a background of fundamentalism. In fact, one of these kids, when he was in the Navy, he had a gay relationship with a man. He never would admit it, but his partner, while he was in the Navy, talked about it later after this murder occurred, that they were lovers in the Navy. They would never mention it. They would never actually acknowledge it to each other or say anything about it. It was, you know, that kind of God was I drunk last night relationship where the next morning you never say a word about what went on behind closed doors. And in fact, any time anyone said anything to this particular brother, I believe it was William, he would go off on these huge macho trips. In other words, he would begin to act overly masculine, talk about race cars and wrestling and all that sort of thing. And he did this during the time he was in the Navy. Matson's and Mallory's bodies were discovered. They were nude in their bed. There were shell casings in the floor. One of them was forced to make a phone call. You could tell he was under duress. He was forced to make a phone call to his father, I believe, saying that they were sick and they were going to be out of town for a few days. They had to make this phone call at gunpoint. Let's hear what a neighbor has to say about this gay couple, about Gary Matson and Winfield Mallory. Would you play the clip, please, Agnes?
Gary and Winfield were a wonderful addition to this community. They were amazing. They were two remarkable men who gave to a fault. They gave of their time. They gave of their advice and their personal help. They gave plants away to people. You know, they never made any money because they were always giving of themselves to the community. And for anyone to feel that their lifestyle somehow offset that and made them bad in some way is absolutely absurd, and it's wrong. I mean, we've lost two of the brightest stars in not just this community, but in the country, as far as I'm concerned. And this is just an act of tragedy.
So why do I lay this at the feet of a conference like that? Well, not only was his family religious nuts, after they pulled this murder, they announced to the police that they were not responsible for it, that they were obeying the law of God. They said that they committed the murders, although they didn't refer to them as committing murder. They killed them because homosexuality violated God's laws, and he hoped that his actions would incite more killings. He said to the law enforcement that the Bible says that homosexuality is a sin and must be punished by death, and the responsibility lies with the couple and not with me. He said that other Christians should have done this, but they didn't have the guts to act like he had. He's facing the possibility of execution, he and his brother. And he says he's hoping to become a Christian martyr whose death would inspire others to lash out against Jews and homosexuals and other minorities. There are a lot of very grim details in this article. I won't go through them all, about the angle of the bullets and what the kids were put through, that the gay couple was put through before they were murdered. I won't go through all of that. They have a long, colorful history, though. They, back in 2001, they pleaded guilty to an arson attack against synagogues, and there was also an arson attack against a clinic, a abortion clinic, from these two. Just amazing. And this is what comes of conferences like we're going to have Catherine Harris appear at and Ken Blackwell appear at. And there's more. This stuff is worldwide. What do you think it takes to get an ultra-Orthodox Jewish pop singer and a Muslim singer together in Jerusalem? They're about the extreme opposite of the cultural and political divide. It would take a hell of a lot to get them together, I think you would agree. Well, what it takes is us gay folks. The Jewish pop singer, part of the ultra-Orthodox group, and the Muslim man are singing together in a duet called Jerusalem Will Burn. It has to do with the gay pride parades. They're singing the song in Hebrew, and the lyrics go, Jerusalem will burn, there will be no gay march. And we've talked about this in the show recently, the rioting, and in fact we talked a little bit about it with Greg a while ago about the murders of the ultra-Orthodox. And as Greg was explaining to us, and I so heartily agree, fundamentalism doesn't matter which flavor it is, or if it's the Jewish flavor or the Muslim flavor or the KKK Christian flavor. It's an evil thing, and it's an ugly thing, and it's about power, and it's about control. The Jewish pop singer is saying that only an onslaught of homosexual radicalism could bring us together. You believe that? They're saying that the Gay Pride March, which they released a song just prior, is a wild campaign against Islam, doctrine of the holy sites. He's saying that all religions discredit gays because it's against decent human nature as it was created by God. And there are various ultra-Orthodox rabbis and Muslim representatives who are all behind this. And the singer is saying, I decided to sing this with an Arab singer to emphasize that both religions are opposed to the gay pride parade. No religion is going to put up with it, especially not in the holy city. And then he says, politicians will never make peace. Maybe we can. Oh, I see. So when we're all dead, then peace will come. I think I'm beginning to understand that. This is the sort of person who stabbed several folks at the gay pride parade in Jerusalem a while back. I think that was 2 years ago. They're talking about Jerusalem. They're trying to stop Jerusalem from becoming Sodom and Gomorrah. And I have the song is in Hebrew. The song is called Jerusalem Will Burn. The lyrics go, Jerusalem will burn, there will be no gay march. I have a 1 minute clip of it. Listen for yourselves. Run it, Agnes. Have it with the disco backbeat. That is an ultra Orthodox Jewish man and a Muslim singing Jerusalem will burn rather than have gay pride parades. Oh, but it doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop there. You see, not only the GLBT community beaten up and blamed for God knows what, we're now responsible for all flag burnings. Yes, this is true. I have an audio clip to prove it. I'm going to run it here in just a second. Not only are we beaten up by them, Pat Tillman's mother has been beaten up. This gay couple in Northern California shot to death at the hands of people who said that it was God's will. Well, go ahead and run the flags clip. I'll give you the impression. Go ahead and run flags for me, please.
If burning a flag wasn't just sacredly immoral, There should be a law against it. That's what that shows you what's going on in Washington with these New Age judges we have up there. Take away everything sacred, even going back and digging up George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and desecrating their heroic names and pulling down all the sacred heroes of America. That's all part of Babylon. They've got to bring it all down to the trash of the New Age system. But it's the ones that's burning the flag that would let me know it's wrong. You don't see the grandmothers burning the flag. You don't see the hard-working farmer up in Kansas burning the flag. You don't see the steel worker in Pittsburgh burning the flag. Oh, no, it's these boys with earrings in their ears that press when they walk. You want the word? It's called queers and faggots. The old American dream. Need some dreamers one more time. If I ever see it, I'm going to pull my car over by the side of the road. I'll tell you that, if I ever see somebody burning the American flag.
Okay, did you hear that? If I ever see someone burning the American flag, if I ever see it, I'm going to pull my car over to the side of the road. He says this after a complete, detailed description that it was the queers and the faggots who were burning the flag. How the hell would he know? He's never even seen it. He also goes on to say it's not the grandmothers or the factory workers, I believe he said, who are burning the flags. It's the ones that priss when they walk. Amazing, is it not? And after that complete, mesmerizing, incredibly intelligent speech, we find that he's never even seen a flag burning, but he's damn sure going to pull over to the side of the road, isn't he? Let's follow this with the lesbian track of the night. This was sent in by our dear listener in Arizona. It's by Ginger Lee, and it's called Holy World.
Fai una foto di questo mondo sacro, mettila sulla copertina della tua Bibbia. Tieni stretto il suo scritto sacro, il suo marchio. Fai una foto di questo mondo sacro, mettila sulla copertina della tua Bibbia. Rendi forte il suo scritto sacro, rendi più forte il tuo marchio.
Holy Jesus, Holy Calvary is rising. Didn't you think, didn't you hope, you know the sun is still shining. Take a picture of this holy world, put it on your Bible cover. Hold on tightly to your Holy Ghost, hold on tighter to your lover. Got babies running around with no shoes but with guns in their hands. We've got money dropping in dirty bombs to protect the Holy Land. So take a picture of this holy world, put it on your Bible cover. Hold on tightly to your Holy Land. Your lover.
winks at me when I kiss you every time. He holds this tiny world in the palm of his hand, but he cried a tear in the ocean when he's watching man killing man. So take a picture of this holy world, put it on your Bible cover. Hold on tightly to your Holy Ghost, hold on tighter to your lover.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. To request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, S-H-E-A-R-S. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
HIV has changed the way people think about sex.
Today's generation really has to be aware about how they go about having sex.
HIV, AIDS is a really scary thing, and it's kind of like holds this generation captive in a sense.
Yes, AIDS scares the crap out of me.
Face the reality of AIDS and other sexually transmitted diseases. Talk to your partners, practice safer sex, and get tested.
Anyone can get it, so you just need to be educated and safe.
This message has been brought to you by Redwood AIDS Information Network and Services with support from the Mel and Grace McLean Foundation.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the last half hour of Strictly Confidential. I am your host, and I am Peter Godbold. It says so on my driver's license, and that's my story, and I am sticking to it. The telephone number is 877, the number 4 head on. That's 877-443-2366, or you can use 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And speaking of Billy Shears, the world's most fabulous straight guy, I got an email from Billy on Friday. This is related to the great telephone meltdown of 2007 that occurred over the last few days here. Got an email from Billy on Friday asking if I would write the commentary for, he posts the commentary on Sunday evenings, I believe, at midnight or Monday morning, depending upon how you look at it. And I said, sure, I'd be glad to. Apparently the person that was going to write the commentary this week wasn't able to come through, and I told him, sure, I'd be glad to do that. I told him, you know, I'll write you a short one, and I'll send it off Sunday afternoon. I went ahead and did it early Saturday afternoon. I'm glad I did do it then, because by 4 p.m. Saturday afternoon, there was no Internet, and it would have never gotten off to him, so I'm glad I had a few minutes earlier. The song, if you'd like to stop by and hear it, it's one I stole from Agnes and Bob. They played a song on Head On Radio Network on the Bob show. I don't know. It's been a year ago. Occasionally, Agnes will play it as a bumper. It's a beautiful song. It's called Wasteland of the Free by Iris DeMent. And if you've never heard the song in full, stop by BillyShearsMusic.com. And I did the commentary on that, so it's at the top of the list, and you can click to play that. It's an amazing track, and I heard it from Bob and Agnes first, and I stole it from Bob and Agnes, and I put it on Billy Shear's site, and I admit it, I did this dirty deed. And we have Jim on line, I don't know what number, but he's on one of the lines. And Jim, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Thank you, Peter. How are you?
I'll be honest with you, Jim, sir. I know you can tell it my voice. I'm a little tired. Quite frankly, you know, when you get to be 54, sometimes you just toss and turn. And last night was one of those nights. And I'm just a little bit draggy today. How about you?
Oh, well, about the same. I'm sitting here having a drink and listening to your program. And going back to the worm dirt story.
Yes.
And let me see if I get this. If this is what I heard, you mean a commander, an 06, a colonel, actually wrote to the mother of a dead soldier?
Yes, I have the quote.
Calling him right, worm dirt, and he did this on official DOD stationery.
He did it on an interview, Jim. He did it on an interview. Now, why he was doing an interview like this on ESPN, which I believe the last time I watched television is a sports network, I couldn't tell you. But he did this interview on ESPN.com, and his name is Colonel Kolarich. And he said, and I quote, he's talking to the interviewer, he's talking on the air, but he's speaking to her. And he said, when you die, I mean, there's supposed to be a better life, right? Well, if you're an atheist and you don't believe in anything, if you die, where is there to go? Nothing. You're worm dirt. So for their son to die for nothing, and now he is no more, that is pretty much hard to get your head around. So I don't know how an atheist thinks. I can only imagine that would be pretty tough. So, yes, he's saying that her son is nothing but worm dirt because she's an atheist.
And he's speaking in an official manner.
Well, sir, I didn't see the interview, so I don't know if he was in uniform or. But Jim, I'm just reading the quote.
In and out of uniform, that makes no difference if he's an acting CO. My God,
I see.
I can't believe that.
I see.
That's just horrible.
Well, I have to agree. I have to agree. Here, it says that he was asked by ESPN whether Tillman's religious beliefs are a factor in the ongoing investigation about Tillman's death. And then Kolarich said, I think so. There is not a whole lot of trust in the system or faith in the system by the Tillmans. So that's my personal opinion, knowing what I know. So I think he's blaming part of the fact that all this is coming out on the Tillman family because they won't let it go because of all the contradicting stories, is the way I'm reading it, Jim.
Well, excuse me if I just appear somewhat incredulous, but that's just so beyond the pale. I can't imagine anyone going out over the airwaves or communicating with a family vis-a-vis some type of electronic medium and saying something like that. I don't understand that.
It's hard to believe, Jim, and they feel that they have this moral authority to pull stuff like this because of the fundamentalists, as best I can tell. It seems to me that the military is almost eat up with it, if you'll pardon the phrase. You know, they have the well, Adam, you've probably read the stories, you know, that the focus on the family, and they have the soldiers are, quote, encouraged to see things like Passion of the Christ, but really they're pretty much ordered, but they're, you know, that I should do a whole story on it, but yeah, the military's just about eat up with fundamentalists.
Well, I can understand that. There's a funny story I wanted to share with you.
Thank God. Thank you, Jim.
This is called Getting Them Back. You know, this happened back in 1970.
Okay.
And one Sunday morning, telephone rang, and I said, oh, Lord, it's too early to see anybody calling. It's my mother. And she said, have you seen today's paper? And I said, no, I haven't. And she said, I want you to look at the bridal section and call me back when you do, okay?
This is too good. Okay.
So I finally got up, went out, collected the paper, turned to the bridal section, and there was this rather interesting bride in the bridal section. And detailing under the byline was a wedding that had occurred in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, at some type of holiness church.
Yes.
And what had happened is this drag queen had gotten up in full bridal attire. Mm-hmm. You know, all those words they use to describe their gowns, like Alençon lace and peau de soie and all this crap.
Yeah, all the big words.
And it was a drag queen who had somehow managed to foist themselves off on a bride who had gotten married, and I mean, she looked sort of like Dame Edith Sitwell, if you know who I'm talking about. I mean, the poor thing was, well, it was a real bad Elizabeth Taylor, that's all I can say.
Oh, my stars.
But then, later on, that church got a hold of this. And before it was over, the state newspaper was forced to completely change its bridal policy.
Oh, my.
And these people would have to be legitimate. But that thing went on for a month. I mean, my mom said, I've just never seen a woman look like that before. Have you? And I said, oh, well. Maybe she's one of these Russian brides. Who knows?
Russian,
the super race chromosome. I didn't know what to say.
Yes.
But I thought, Lord have mercy. I haven't thought of that story in years. But they really, somebody, as far as playing a trick, and this wasn't Halloween, but Halloween came early for the state newspaper that year.
Oh, my God. They did it in a holiness church. Imagine that. The nerve.
Well, I mean, I thought, you know, for 1970, that was pretty gutsy.
Absolutely, that's pretty gutsy. That's pretty gutsy in 2007. I'm just floored.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Oh, well, just going back through the ravages of time, that story just popped into my head. I was just thinking, well, you know, I'm going to tell Peter about this and see what he thinks.
She said, Jim, please come. Please go to the wedding section. I want you to see this and tell me what you think, is what she said.
Yeah. She said, you know, this girl is certainly unusual and remarkable. Those are the words she used. And she said, well, call me back and let me know what you think.
That's so funny.
And
bless her heart.
The only thing I could say, wow, I don't know. She's really something, isn't she?
Yeah, she was something, all right.
And the write-up, I mean, they had really gone to full lengths to just make it as, like, they had the wedding reception was sponsored by KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
No. Oh, the humanity.
And they were going to... Sorry, I can't help but laugh. I'm thinking about it now.
Oh.
Honeymoon, somewhere, excuse me, up at Gatlinburg or something like that. And the whole thing was just a complete hoax.
That's too
funny.
So
that paper really went through a lot of hell over that. It really did.
That is too funny. That's just perfect. And to happen in your neck of the woods, that's priceless. I mean,
shortly thereafter, they had a disgruntled employee of the same paper who had written in the classified ads about a job.
Yeah.
And another friend of mine called me and said, look at page 3A and wherever these ads were. And under the ad, it was, fuck your way to the top.
Oh, Jesus. There was a great line about that somewhere, where somebody screamed, who do you have to fuck around here to get a waiter or something? What was that line? Some movie.
You mean from the Boys in the Band, who do you have to fuck around here to get a drink?
That's it. That's yes, from Boys in the Band. I knew it had to be something like that. Is that where that's from? Thank you.
Cliff Gorman, when he was mixing up that drink called a Blue Whale that looked like it had Windex in it.
That's perfect.
But I just thought I would share that with you, and I don't mean to offend any person who is, who enjoys drag and stuff like that. The point of it is, they certainly got their own back in spades at a rather conservative Republican newspaper and embarrassed the dickens out of them. They really did.
Yes, they did. They did. It even incurred the horror of your very own dear sweet mother. Jim, please look at this.
She said, "Well, listen. When you get up, I want you to go, collect your paper and take a look at the bridal section and tell me what do you think about this woman." I remember what she did say. She said, "Do women really have Adam's apple?"
Bless her heart.
I know.
She was trying so hard to be open-minded.
God rest her. But when she said that, I said, "Oh my Lord." And then it sort of began to spread what had happened. And there were these two guys, they called the Hammond Sisters.
The Hammonds? Yeah.
The Hammond Sisters. And they were from Myrtle Beach, so they lived in Columbia. And they decided that they would say, okay, we're going to really give you something to look at. Open your eyes over the breakfast table on Sunday morning. So here goes. And then they went on to write up this description of the reception, and I won't go into all that now, but they had these deliberately misspelled words like instead of candelabra, it was candelobsters and stuff like that. And how it got past the editor, I don't know.
God only knows.
They had not verified it or vetted the article. And
Myrtle Beach is just incredibly southern. That is as southern as it gets. I mean,
I thought I might share that with you and, after all the black news tonight, just a little humor there. No offense intended to anyone at all, but I mean, like I say, people have a way of getting you back if you want to be ugly to them,
That's true. That's very true. And hell hath no fury like a drag queen upset.
Absolutely, because I tell you, they'll cut you.
Oh, it's priceless. Oh, honey, some of them will.
Either by word, deed, or mouth. So,
I'm
going to bid you good night and hope you have a better day tomorrow, okay?
Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you for calling, Jim.
You take care. God bless you.
You too.
Bye.
Oh, Lord. One always has a hard time following Jim on the phone. I have a couple of little short clips I wanted to get to mention to you. One of our listeners, Jay in Tucson, suggests that I recommend Elmer Gantry, the movie. We've been talking about movies a lot. Every time I'm on the air, I'm going, Netflix, blah, blah, blah.
Well, she's recommending that I mention Elmer Gantry. In fact, that is a very good movie. And he is a religious huckster. If you don't know the story of Elmer Gantry, it's a great movie. And she mentioned that because we brought up Catherine Kuhlman the other night. I have a nice email here from Brian. And Brian talks about a number of things, the so-called presidential Democratic interview and the logo channel and this, that, and the other. But he makes a point here, and I've heard this point before, but quite frankly, it's never really connected until I saw it in an email from a listener. But he's talking about this whole thing about whether being a GLBT is something you learn or something that you do by choice to piss people off, or who knows why you would do something like that. But he's saying in the mail here, the bottom line is it doesn't matter. He's saying it doesn't matter in uppercase whether or not it's a choice. We're talking about consenting adults who are not infringing on anyone's right to life, liberty, or property. And, Brian, thank you. That is absolutely true. And, it's an easy trap to fall into about whether it's nature or nurture, or whether it's on purpose or there's a decision made. It's an easy trap to fall into because for so many years, Brian, the fundamentalists used the argument it goes against nature. It goes against nature. So there was this, they framed the argument, in other words. So we fall into this huge trap over the years of proving that it's nature. Okay. So now, when the research is coming out that it's nature, they're saying, well, you're no better than the animals if it's nature. I mean, so you can't win with them. But you're absolutely right about this. It does not matter. We're talking about consenting adults who are not infringing on anyone's rights to life, liberty, or property. Thank you, Brian. Well said. And in the expected news department, Fred Phelps has told the world that it was a GLBT community that took that bridge down. We pretty much knew that was coming, did we not, my fellow friends? They are saying that the bridge stood in place by the word of God, and it fell by the word of God. This is actually Shirley Phelps Roper, who is the evil daughter of Fred Phelps. And, of course, he's getting kind of elderly now, so Shirley has to do the talking for Daddy. And she's saying that each of these little events, it wasn't such a little event if you happened to be on that bridge, each of the little events like this just a harbinger of the coming destruction of the American experiment. We are delivering the final call of a doomed nation. Let me see, checking the time for you. Okay, yes, we can do this. This is a dance track tonight. I just had to count using my fingers when I... God. And Bob wants me to get a camera? He wants me to do this on video? Oh, my God. So anyway, I just counted the minutes, and yes, we can fit this song in. And, it's kind of an inspiring song, considering all the crap, except for the wonderful interview we had earlier. Of all the bad news, this is a great song, and it offers a little hope. It is a dance track. It is the Body Pump Dance Floor Remix of Martha Washington singing Listen to the People. I love this song.
Waiting to turn this life
Love that track. The first time I ever heard that in my whole little life was, oh, it was years ago. I was listening to our good friend Mike Malloy, who's now on the Nova M Network, and Mike played that as a bumper, which is the short segment of music that goes, of course, between the hymn and a commercial break. And anyway, I was fascinated by it. They just played a short clip of it, and it I was Googling all over the place to find out what that song was called, and then I found a version of it, but it wasn't the version he played. It took me quite a while to find the version he played, and what you heard was the version, the Mike Malloy version of Listen to the People. I want to get this in tonight, and remember we were talking about the firefighters, the straight firefighters in the San Diego Fire Department, who were suing because they were harassed. They were, remember they were saying they were vile sexual taunts, which when you read them, they were vile and they were horrible. There were statements like the crowd screaming, "Show me your hose, and you can put out my fire, and you can give me mouth to mouth," stuff like that. But of course, you know, that's the trademark of straight men screaming at women for the last 1,000 years, sexual innuendos and catcalls. But I guess when the gay crowd was looking at the good-looking fireman, that was vile. Who knew they were straight? I mean, you know, how do you, you're in a freaking gay pride parade? Oh, Jesus. So anyway, yes, they're going to sue, but guess who their attorneys are? Oh, you're going to love this. It's the Michigan-based Thomas More Law Center. It is a conservative Christian law practice, yes. And they are a 501c3 organization, so all donations to them are fully tax deductible. Now, you just know that the Michigan-based Thomas More Law Center sought the firemen out and started this whole mess. You can be quite sure that the fireman had no clue that in Michigan there was a Thomas More Law Center, a conservative Christian law practice. So, and the article refers to the San Diego fireman as being respected. Oh, yes, they were also very upset that the Christians, who also thought they were gay, by the way, were screaming at them that they're going to go to hell. You know, you have to go through the line, you know, the crucible. You have to go through the line of screaming Christians in any outdoor gay event, and they felt threatened because the Christians were screaming, "Going to go to hell," to the San Diego firemen. So they are suing at the hand of the Thomas More Law Center. Now, on the Thomas More Law Center homepage, and I'll wrap this up quickly, we're nearing the end of the show. This is the sort of cases they take on their homepage. Michigan governor sued by the Thomas More Law Center for discrimination against citizens who oppose embryonic stem cell research. And a number of other articles or lawsuits of about the same category. It is a conservative Christian practice, after all. And by the way, you remember we talked about the Lutherans who came out in mass? I think it was 84 of them, remember? They were active pastors, and they were retired pastors, and they finally just came out as a group and said, look, we're gay. We've been here all along. You love us. We're part of you. Get over it. Remember there was a huge conference coming up, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America? Well, that was coming up the next week. Well, they had that conference, and as a result of that, the church is now saying that they are not going to discipline pastors who are in a faithful, committed, same-gender relationship. This is a huge change, because prior to this, you could be a gay Lutheran pastor, but you could not be in any sort of relationship, casual or committed. And so, that is taking us closer to the end. Oh, I want to tell you about IBM. And you know, you wonder, because they're always beating up Ford for, you know, running ads in the in gay-friendly publications, and oh, let's boycott Ford and all this stuff. Well, guess who else is gay-friendly? And this is probably way over their head, but IBM is very gay-friendly. You know, IBM doesn't make desktop computers anymore. They may still make laptops. I'm not sure, but I kind of doubt it. I think they're only doing like cluster systems and you know, high-speed scientific computers and mainframes and what have you. But so this is probably way over their head. But in any case, there is a whole team, a whole GLBT team.